As we keep saying in the last few weeks, the situation in the world is showing us clearly every week that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be more and more strict with the situation and the countries and the Gentiles and the Goyim with all kinds of natural disasters. We all see what's happening in Japan. We don't know. It could be only the beginning. Next thing, they're going to have another explosion in a nuclear facility. It could be millions of people can die. Nobody knows. And obviously, it's affecting the whole world. They're already saying today that in Israel, many of the Jews are going to lose millions, and many companies going to lose, I think they say, $250 million. Because the companies that they deal with in Japan probably will go bankrupt. Who knows how long they're not going to be able to get back? You don't know, really. Also, many of the insurance companies in Israel are insuring in New Zealand, and there was a big problem there a few, you know, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. And now in Japan also. So they're going to lose fortune. They're all going bankrupt. One thing that happened in one side of the world can affect people all over. It's a chain reaction. So we don't know where it's going to head. Who knows what's next? One thing we know, the Gemara says that every disaster that happened to the Goyim, to the non-Jews, should have happened to the Jews. It's all connected to the Jews. The Jews are in Israel. There's a tragedy somewhere in the world. It's connected to the nation of Israel. And that should bring us a waking up call. We have to wake up. When we see what could have happened to us by seeing what happened to them, it should wake us up. Before, God forbid, it's too late. The mercy of Hashem, that so far with us, even though we have tragedies, it's not that we don't have, but it's nothing compared to the tragedies of the Goyim. And there's an earthquake somewhere here, there, like in Iran, it used to be 70,000 and then 10,000, and now they're speaking about tens of thousands of people. Tsunami, 500,000 people 2 years ago. This is amazing what's going on. Plus, you need billions and billions of dollars to get back everything to normal. With a small, tiny country that we have in Israel, one little disaster can put us out of business. You saw what happened with the fire. They already panicked. Fire, fire. They panicked already. They started to beg the world, come help us put the fire off. Not to talk about, God forbid, something that happened. In case you didn't know, in the city of Tzfat, there was a big earthquake that wiped out the whole city. Thousands of people died. It happened. It's not that it never happened. It happened in history. So let's not feel too secure. And we have to remember that whatever happened to them could have happened to us, and this is time for us to wake up. Today I'm going to speak about 10 different kinds of angels that we have in a creation. I spoke about it in Hebrew, and I got few people who asked, based on the title, if I can make that lecture in English. It sounds interesting. That's not the main thing in this lecture, but it comes from the Rambam, the laws of Yesodei Torah, the foundation of the Torah, chapter 2. I'm going to go over it. Hopefully we'll be able to finish it in the next hour. But it's very, very interesting, and it will teach us a little bit the way Hashem operates in this world. The Rambam writes, and remember, this is chapter 2. I start from the first halacha, first provision, and go all the way to the end. This dear God, this honored and great God, there is an obligation to love Him. There's an obligation to love Him, to fear Him, As the Torah says, you should love your God, and it also said, Et Hashem Elokecha Tira, fear your God. Love your God, fear your God. Which one is a higher level? Everyone will tell you, of course, to love. To become religious out of love is much greater than to become religious with a gun to your head, no? Person that got cancer, God forbid, and then became religious, he deserved the same reward that a person who became religious when he was fully healthy. No problem, everything is fine. It's not the same. He's feeling, who knows, in 2-3 months I may not be here. It's time to wake up before I really miss the train. But you'll be surprised. According to the Kabbalist, to Kabbalah, fearing God in certain scenario is a higher level. It's a very high level. People think, fear, became religious out of fear, it's no big deal. I always say, I wish all the Jews in the world will become religious only from fear, than stay what they are. No? What's better? That you have 10-20% that will become religious from love and the rest will be stay goyim or become worse. And, oh, come on. Of course, it's better everyone will be religious, if not from love, from fear. But it always goes together. That's the idea. Just learning to love God only and to fall in love with Him based on His performance, it won't less. Just fearing Him also is not good. It's get to a point that a person give up. That's it. See, I had it. I can't live with this pressure. Combination of both of them always work. If a person has some from it, he can be successful. The question that we have right away is, how there is a command to love God? Can you order a person to love you? A person that wants to get married to a girl, he comes to her and says, "Hello, Miriam, my name is Yosef. I order you to love me." You better do. What do you mean? And if I won't, what's going to happen? I'll do this and this. I don't know. I have a serious machine gun out there. If you don't, how is it going to work? If you put a gun to a person's head and you say, "If you don't love me, I kill you," assume you have a way to check if he really fell in love with you or not. Do you think the gun will do the job? The gun can make you give money. The gun can make you become Shomer Shabbat. The gun can make you say all kinds of things. But the gun cannot make any change in your heart. The gun cannot make a change in your heart. If you're a person that does not like the color blue or red, putting a gun to your head won't make you a lover of red or blue. It's not going to change it. But here we see that there is an obligation in the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that you must love me. You have to love me. If it's in the Torah, that means it's possible. How is it possible? We're going to learn now. The Torah says like this. Rambam asks, and how is it the way to love this God and to fear Him as He ordered us? How are we going to do it? We have to learn how to do it. In a time that a person looks carefully in all his creations, the wonderful things that he created, and will see his endless wisdom in everything that he planned here, he falls in love immediately and prays an honor and desire, huge desire, to know this dear God. As King David wrote, "Tzama nafshi le'elokim le'el chai." My soul is thirsty to you, God. Thirsty. Like a person that didn't drink for a week, is fainting already, you bring him water, wow, what happiness. Then, when a person calculates and review carefully all these things, right away he back up and fear this great God and understand immediately what a tiny nothing creation is. Who am I? Nothing. Dust in the wind. Little bug. Little bug is better than me, if I really think about it. Right away, his ego goes down to zero. When the ego grows, a person begins to think, what a smart guy I am, what a handsome guy I am, what a rich guy I am, what, I'm this, I'm that. The more he thinks about his talents, then he has a higher and higher ego. But once he realizes, wow, compared to this God, I'm nothing. Mamash, not even nothing. There's nothing, there's no words to describe. And this is what David HaMelech wrote, Ki er esh amecha, ma'aseh etzbet eotecha. When I review the galaxies, heaven, all the stars, right away I think, ma enosh ki tizkerenu. How do you have time to waste on people? After he created such a world, I'm thinking to myself, you have time to deal with me, what I do, what I do not do. I learn Torah, I don't learn Torah. I make a scene, I don't make a scene. It's hard for me to understand. This is big rules. After reviewing all the great things that Hashem did for you personally, then you fall in love with him even more. Why? Because if he made a beautiful world, not everything in the world you use. So not everything, you feel a direct appreciation. Because, well, what do I have to do with this? There's beautiful stars there, all kinds of things. I appreciate the sun and the moon, fine. Because I have a use in it. But other than that, who cares how many stars are out there, galaxies, they're moving, they're turning around. What is in it for me? But the Torah says, Sum arom enechem, rise your eyes to the sky, u mi bara ele, and think, who created this? Why Hashem told us to do it? To look up to the sky and being amazed from his creation. For this reason, when you see an architect. If an architect wants to impress you, what does he do? He takes you to see one of his buildings, no? Look, I designed this building. As long as you did not see it, you don't know what this guy is talking. Once you see what he is capable of doing, right? From that moment on, you feel, wow, what a professional this guy is. Same thing when you review the creation, you think to yourself, wow, what an amazing thing. Everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu is created, you can divide to different categories. How many? Three different categories. Everything you have in the world, you can put in three different categories. What is it? There are creations that have an image, and from the minute they were created, they're constantly dying. From the minute they were created, they begin to die, like people. Every day, his battery is dying, no? It was 100%, 99, 98, until it dies. Everybody understand, this creation will not be here forever. So, Nifsadim, they begin to lose more and more and more until nothing left. Plants, trees, metals. And there is things that were created that have an image and material, but do not change from their original image. For instance, metal, trees, you can take it and change it to a different material, right? You take a tree, you make a table, right? You take a person, you chop his hand off, it's a different person now. You chop his legs off, you change his image. It can still be here in a different image. You take metals, you make pipes, you make doors, you can make doors. You can make all kinds of things from it. So this is a raw material that you can change it to a different, many different ways. The second category is material that does not change. It's always going to remain the same, like the stars. Planets, stars, the sun, the moon. It's always going to stay the same. There's nobody can come and interfere with the creation of God. We have no permission to change it. So it's not in our hand. They will always going to remain the same way that he made them. And there are a third category. There is a third category that does not have any raw material, nothing, no material at all. It's 100% spiritual. Who? The angels. You look at them now, you cannot see them. Only with spiritual eyes you're able to see them. But as a person, you cannot see them. They don't have a body. And not a material or any materialistic image. What is it, in that case, the Rambam says, that we see in the Tanakh, in the entire Tanakh, we see many descriptions of the angels, that the prophet speaking about how they look. Wings, fire, no? We see. We just say that they don't have an image. And here, the prophets, the messenger of God, they keep saying, I saw an angel with fire wings. Flying. No? So he has wings. All these are prophecies and images. It's like having a dream. Like a person see all kinds of images in his dream. They're not real in reality. You cannot come and show them. It's like a vision, seeing a vision. And it's all analogies. The Torah and the prophets speaks in the language of people. Why? If they speak in a spiritual language, nobody understands. Because we are not only spiritual. We are a combination of spirituality and material. But the way Hashem speaks to us in the Torah, it's in a way that people can understand. Like the chair of God. Does he really have a chair? Well, a chair with four legs? What is it made from? Leather? Canvas, from what? Obviously, it's not really a chair up there in heaven, but it's an image of a chair. Or the hand of God. Does he have a hand? God forbid. If you think he has an image of a person, that's a very big fira. It's mamash rebelling against the principles of Judaism. To imagine God in any way, any shape. This is what the Torah say. Is Hashem Elokecha, your God. Your God is Esh Ochla, is fire that eats everything on the way. This is an analogy. It's an example. It doesn't mean really it's fire like you have fire here, you light a cigarette. Obviously. Or if you say, anger in my nose, Chara Af Hashem. It's like the nose is smoking. A person is angry. Like smoke, it's like an expression. It's really not, that doesn't have a nose. Or the eyes of God. Does he really have eyes? What color? Blue, green, red? What color is his eyes? Obviously, he doesn't have eyes. It's a spiritual, holy thing. We have no understanding what it is. To try to explain to us in a spiritual what God is or what the angel is, it will take a billion years and you still won't understand anything. So what's the point? It's like trying to explain to a blind person the color blue. How many years is it going to take? It looks like green. What's green? It looks like the sky. What sky? Whatever you're going to say, doesn't know what you're talking about. Why? He is not capable of understanding it. Doesn't have the ability. Same thing here. Try to explain to a person what an angel really is. He obviously won't be able to understand. Then the Rambam say all the creations of Hashem, you can rate them in different levels, one above the other. Not all of them in the same level. For instance, the angels are in a very high level. It's a higher level than other things. Some things in a creation has lower level. All of them are able to move and to function as long as Hashem's energy is in them. Once God removes his energy from the creation, none of them can last 1 second. They cannot move, they cannot function, there's nothing they can do. I'll give you an example. Now, I'm holding something in my hand, right? If I tell you to describe it, you're going to tell me it's 10 inches long, 4 inches wide, black, made from leather, has white pages inside. This is all a lie. Everything you're going to say, it's all a lie. In reality, the truth is that it doesn't even exist, this material. It doesn't exist. What you see right now, it's a big illusion. Not only this, if you take the entire earth, the entire world that we live in, which is a big thing, heavy, big, and you remove the energy of God from the creation, how does it work? It's all atoms that moves. The speed of the atoms are so fast, they move so fast that it creates an illusion that material exists. But really, material doesn't exist. The whole world will become like a little gum. If you really take all the world and take away the movement of the atoms, it's going to fall down to one little gum or tennis ball. That's the whole world. So how does it look so big and take spaces and all kinds of different materials? It's the speeds of the atoms that creates this illusion. The faster they move, or they move in different shapes, it creates to us different sizes. For instance, I always like to give an example from a fan. If you turn the fan on, before you turn the fan on, what do you see? Four arms, right? Looks like a cross. Once you turn it on, the faster it turns, the bigger the illusion is. It's a fantasy, it doesn't really exist. It looks like you have a circle, full. It doesn't look four arms. Why it looks like a full circle? Because they turn so fast. It looks like there's a round wheel, full. The faster it turns, it looks like it stands. You don't see the movement. Same thing, you look at the wall. You are unable to see the movements of the atoms. They move so fast. So they move so fast, so they fill up the whole space. But really, in reality, they don't exist. It's all an illusion. It's very clever. How the world is created is amazing. Put together the gravity, that everything is pulled down to air, that it won't fly in space. How everything is planned. How can you not fall in love with Hashem? So much He has done for us, just for us to be able to get what we need for our life. If one of the things would not work correctly, we couldn't live here 1 minute. One little thing would be different, the life would lose its value right away. So, what are the names of these angels? 10 different kinds. Each angel has a job in a creation. This is all servants of Hashem. They're created for a mission. One angel is in charge of the sand. One angel is in charge of metal. One angel is in charge of waters. One angel is in charge of the trees, of the growing things. There's angel that in charge of nations, angel in charge of medicine. Each one of them has a job. It's like an army. You have the head of the army, in our case is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then you have many commanders, general. He's in charge of the tanks, he's in charge of the planes, he's in charge of the soldiers. There's different categories. So, the highest level, it's Chayot HaKodesh. Chayot HaKodesh. The holy Chayot. What Chayot means? In Hebrew, Chaya means an animal. Why you call an animal Chaya? Because it lives. Chaim. Comes from Chaim. It has Chaim. Chai. It moves. It's not raw material or it's not plants. Plants also grow, but they're not really live like us. They don't have nefesh. Nefesh, it's the blood. The Torah says, Adam hu nefesh, that makes us able to move. But here we are talking about these angels, Chayot HaKodesh, which is the highest level. And then there is what we call Ar-Elim. Ar-Elim, with Aleph. And then Chashmal, Chashmalim. And then Srafim. And then Malachim. And then Bnei Elokim, and then Kruvim, and then Ishim. All these 10 names, each one is in a higher level than the other. Starting from Chayot HaKodesh, and everything I mentioned is one step below the other. And what's the highest, of course, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the highest level. And even the worlds that you see here, there are different worlds. There are seven different heavens. Each one has a name. Each one is in a higher level. Traveling from one heaven to the other, it's 500 years of journey. Whatever that means. I don't know. Just for us to understand a little bit. Then we have four different spiritual worlds. Atzilut is the highest. Then Bria, the creation. Then Yetzira. And then Atzilut, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. Olam Asiya. We live in the world of Asiya, to do. Material, to move, to do, to create. This is called Olam Asiya. It's the lowest level. Then there's a higher level, which Yetzira, the Olam Yetzira. Why Bria is higher than Yetzira? Sometimes the Torah uses the word Bereshit Bara Elokim, Bara. Sometimes they say Yatzar Elokim. What's the difference between Bara and Yatzar? Who knows? Bara and Yatzar, what's the difference? Obviously, we just explained that Bara is higher than Yatzar. Bara means Yesh Me'ain. There was nothing, and now there is something. There was really nothing. Hocus pocus, boom, you have a rock. There's nothing before. No stone. Now there is rocks in the world. Where they came from? From the world of Hashem. Yatzar, that means the raw material was there, and we gave it a shape, an image, which means we made a square table. Why? There was a tree. Tree that was already there. We took it and we made Yetzira. Yotzer means Tzura. Tzura means an image. Atzilut is the world where the chair of Hashem is like something that we have no understanding where it is. It's 100% high spiritual world. Then we have Bria. From there, all the words that Hashem say created. Created fire, created world, created sand, created water, created everything with his name, with his words. And then we have Yetzira, when the have everything exists, but over here they receive their images. Tzura. And then the world of Asiya, this is the world where Hashem put the souls in a body like us. And this is a place of a test, free choice and everything that we have. And he gave the Torah here. Everything that you see in this world went to four different categories. First, he was in Olam Atzilut. Then he went to Olam Abriya. Then to Olam HaYetzirah, and it keeps changing in a spiritual way, which we have no understanding how to even describe it. Until it goes here, you see it in a simple way, but there's a much, much deeper things, but we don't have an understanding. But it goes to four different methods, four different categories, until you see it in a simple way over here. When a person speaks, everything that he says is going to upper worlds. Every thought that a Jew has affecting all these worlds. Everything that happens, every sin or mitzvah that a person does affecting all these worlds. If a person would only know every little thing that he does wrong, what a negative effect it has in the entire universe and the upper worlds, he would die out of fear and embarrassment immediately, just from thinking, wow, what have I just done? How can it be that I had the nerve to do such a thing? But since people do not understand, they keep doing it. And one day they have to face the damage they made, the spiritual destruction. What is it like? I once gave an example of two Russian soldiers sitting somewhere in a nuclear facility in Russia. And they are in charge of the main shelter, of the main switch. So they tell them, your job is, no matter who comes here, you never let them touch this switch. They give them lots of guns, this, everything, bombs. Nobody is touching that switch, right? It's in charge of all the missiles, the atomic missiles. You know, they drink a little bit L'chaim, another vodka, and another one, and another one, in a cold night. So one of them say to the other, what would you give me if I turn the switch on? I told you, come on, you won't dare. He said, yeah, how much? 1,000 rubles. No, no. 5,000 I give you. Would you do it? He said, yeah, here, 5,000, do it. He turned the switch on. Nothing happened. So you see, it's all a lie. All these generals, they're all fools. Keep telling us, be careful, be careful. It's like the people today speak against the Torah. All these fanatic rabbis, careful, Shabbat. Careful not to miss tefillin. Be careful not to curse. Be careful, lashon hara. What's going on? Here, I do it every minute and I'm making millions. Nothing is happening. I'm just on my way to vacation, Rabbi. No, that's how they talk, these fools. So this Russian, for 10, 20 minutes, they play chess. They're happy until the sirens begin. Wow, what happened? 30 million people died in the other side of the ocean. Fires everywhere. Bridges are falling. Such tragedy. What did I do? I moved my hand 2 inches up. From that's what happened. The fact that a person makes a sin here and he doesn't see the impact of his sin in the upper world doesn't mean it doesn't affect the upper worlds. Just that you cannot see it doesn't mean you did not make a damage. That's what a person has to always remember. The Torah came and told you the damage, and you have to know that when Hashem says something in the Torah, it means he's serious. It's not a joke. So the Rambam continue. All these images, all these spiritual angels that I just mentioned, they know Hashem. They know Him. In a much higher level than what a person can know Him. Even though the Torah says, V'yadata et Hashem Elokecha, you should know your God. V'yadata ayom, you should know today that I'm the only God. You should know there was no other God. You should know there was no one before me. There will never be one after me. You should know I run the whole world. You should know I created the world. There's many you should know in the Torah. You should know I'm merciful. You should know I'm your father. You should know you are my children. You should know I took you out of Egypt. This is all a knowledge language. Nowhere in the Torah it says you should believe that I took you out of Egypt. You should believe I'm God. No, you should know, you should know, you should know 100%. Even if a person reach 100% level of knowledge that Hashem is here and the Torah, he knows 100% in this world, it's nothing compared to the level of the knowledge of each one of the 10 categories of these angels that I mentioned. Their level of understanding who is Hashem and his level is in a much higher level. Why? Because they are 100% spiritual. 100% spiritual, understand 100% spiritual. We are not 100% spiritual. As long as we live, we are a combination. They know Hashem, de'a gdola, in a very high level. Everyone according to his level. Even the lowest level, the lowest level that knows much less than the second level, and the second level that knows much less than the third level, still is much greater than us. The lowest level of the angel is nothing to compare their understanding of God compared to us. Why? Why is it? Why Hashem couldn't make us and them in the same level of knowledge? It would make things a lot easier, no? Oh, everybody understands who's Hashem. And it's very good. The answer is, it's not going to be any test. No free choice. Right? There's no free choice. Right? I'll give you an example. Let's say you have a friend that is very poor. And you are the one who put money every Friday. You come by his house. You push under the door an envelope with $1,000 that he have money to buy his children food all week. You push an envelope anonymously and you run away. Now, this person doesn't know it's you. He's in the same synagogue with you, and he doesn't like you. He doesn't like you pray too loud. Sometimes you sit in his place. He doesn't like the way you look. He doesn't like your accent. He doesn't like your last name. Who knows? He has a lot of complaints, this guy. When he doesn't know who you are, he is in a test to do the right thing, not to do the right thing. Now it's a test. Once he knows that he only lives thanks to you, you're the one who gives him everything, and he knows it, does he have a free choice anymore? No. Even if he wants to do something against you, he won't dare. Why? How can I do? This guy's feeding me. I'm going to go against him. It doesn't make sense. So the level of the test is much lower now. Much lower. Before, it was 50-50 test to be a decent human being or not. You can do yes, you can do no, on and off. But now, there's no more test. There's no test. Or if every time a person would do something wrong, he see right away the damage, well, nobody would do something wrong. Who would do something wrong? Ah, now when you don't see, that's a test. If we had a level of understanding of any one of these angels about Hashem, we, first of all, we wouldn't even need Torah. Yeah, we'd need only the list of the mitzvot, and that's it. All the other Musar, the entire book of Dvarim you can erase. We don't need it. We already have a very big level of understanding without all these Musar and ethics. What do we need it for? You need to tell me not to steal. You need to tell me not to speak Lashon Hara when I'm in such a level of understanding about God. But some of our great rabbis in history, that their level was in a very, very high level, the knowledge. You see that it wasn't shayach to make any sins for these people. You would see, no matter what would you do, this person will never even consider your offer, because the level that he has in Hashem is so much higher than the average person, that it wasn't even an option to offer him something. Hey, Rabbi, I'll give you $1 million, just smoke one time a cigarette on Shabbat. And then you can build yourself a wonderful yeshiva with his $1 million. One time, Rabbi, nobody sees, here, $1 million. Person doesn't have knowledge, he says, you know, it's worth it. Well, once a person reaches a certain level, it's a joke, it's not a test. Depends who you are. No, so, Kol HaNimtzaim, everything that exists in this world, Chutz Min HaBore, besides God, from the first creation in the creation until the smallest fly that flies around, the mosquito or anything, they're all here as a part of the truth of this God. If you take one of the things that looks completely not important out of the creation, it ruins the entire balance and the entire truth of the creation. Sometimes people tell me, I wish I can send a letter to God and give him some suggestion how to make the world better. You know, I would, for instance, I would cancel this. I would not this. I would kill this kind of people. I would get rid of this. I would do that. I would change this. I will make Parnassah so much easier. Nobody has to fight, jealousy, anger, stealing. Everybody will have plenty. Everyone will have mind to be released. He has already a list. He's like a politician. He wants to make a better world. So sometimes I make arguments with them. He say, I would cancel this. Then I explain to him what would happen to the world if he cancel this. He says, oh, okay, you're right. But at least this. I say, no, but in the end, he keeps coming with new suggestion. So what's the final answer? The final answer to all these people who think, the way Hashem created the world is the best ideal creation that's possible. It could not be better, because if there was a better way, somebody perfect like Hashem would have done it. He would never do 90% or 95% perfect. It had to be perfect because he's perfect and everything about him is perfect. So if he made the world in this way that we have to sweat to get a dollar, and the woman has to scream when she gives birth, and all these things, and this animal is kosher, and this one is not, and this bird can fly fast, and this one can fly slow, and everything eats everything, and this, and all the stars, and the rain comes here and not here. So many trillions of things to think about. If one of them would be different than the way it is right now, the world wouldn't be perfect. Now, when everything is the way Hashem made it, the world is perfect. It could never have been better. And everything that looks to us not good, we are the problem, not the system. You understand or no? Then, Hashem knows himself better than all the angels that I mentioned. He is the only one in this entire world, universe, upper world, spiritual worlds, that knows 100% who he is. Even those great angels that I mentioned, they have very high level of knowledge about him, but he knows himself more than anybody else. There's nothing that was created that reached the same level of understanding about Hashem and his perfectness like Hashem himself. You understand? By people, sometimes a person can know you better than you know yourself. Like, for instance, I can tell you about people certain things that they themselves don't know that they have it. Based on what the Torah taught us. The way they walk, the way they do certain things, the way they talk, the way they move their hands when they talk, the way their feet. That shows me everything about their character. In what spiritual level they are, how much ego they have. If you come and connect them to a lie detector and ask them to review their own character, they'll make many mistakes. Because the person doesn't see the negative about himself in objective eyes. En adam ro'e negae atzmo. I give you an example. You are in a dorm in yeshiva. You're 17 years old. You have a room. You have bunk beds. Two here, two there. You know, four or five guys in a room, let's say. One guy sits on your bed, you're ready to kill him. Oh, Reuven, how many times I told you I'm fixing the sheet, I like it clean, I don't want people to see it, you know? You sit on people's sheets every day. You don't think that anything that you do, like, come on, Rabbi, what's the big deal? I sat on his bed. No. But if when he sits on your bed, you're ready to bring your gun from home. Why? You could not see when other people do to you what you do to them, you don't see it equal. That's no big deal. I know what I'm doing. But he doesn't, but you know. Or, every one of us hate crooks, even though we're just as bad as them. Right? We lie, we cheat, we do things. We accept ourselves with this. How many people hate themselves for all the lies they tell every day? If we know how many lies we make, if a person lies three times a day, it's 90 times a month. If you would know every time your friend makes a lie, if your friends lie 90 times a month, you wouldn't want to stand one feet next to him. Do me a favor, don't come near me. Why? I can't stand you. Why? You're a liar, you're a crook. I don't want people like you to be around me, not only not to be my friend. But you lie just as much as him or more. But you don't hate yourself like you hate him. I'll give you another example. There was a competition between the city of Athens in Greece to the city of Sparta. They have a sport competition. So one old man comes with his cane. He's trying to find a place to sit. So in a stadium, one side is the fans of Athens, and the other side is the fans of Sparta. And he's a fan of Athens, this old man. So he comes to the side of the fan of his team, and he's looking for a place to sit, and it's packed. And he's a very old man, he's hardly walking. Not one of the people over there got up to give him his chair. I'm going to stand 2 hours now for this old man. What do I know him, Bechlad? Let him find a place. I don't care. Then he saw there's no place in his side. He went to the other side. This is the opposite fence. It's his enemies. So he went to the other side. He's looking for a place, also packed. Well, one person got up and said, "Hey, Grandpa, come have my seat." Guess what happened in that moment? All the fans of the other side raised and started to clap, cheer for that man, that he gave him the chair. You admire so much what he did because you know it's the truth, but you did not do it. It didn't bother you to do the right thing. But when somebody else does it, you look at it in a different way. A person sometimes thinks he knows himself, but he doesn't. Sometimes a person writes a review about you. You sure you're talking about me? Then you ask another person to write a review, same words. These guys are crazy. What is it like? One guy went on the highway in the opposite direction. He called up his wife and said, "Hey, Rachel, today everyone is crazy. Thousands of people are driving against traffic." She told him, "Hey, you fool. Did you ever think maybe you're the one who goes against the traffic?" He doesn't see. You know, one time I came back from Great Neck. I came back from Great Neck at 1 o'clock at night, entered the Palisades Parkway towards Muncie. I had one rabbi sitting in my back and I'm driving in the front. Guess what happened? I'm driving towards north and a car comes in front of me. He entered the wrong side of the highway. I'm driving maybe 65, 70 miles an hour, and he's driving 65, 70. All of a sudden, I see light coming towards me. In the last second, I move to the other direction. And he continued to go against traffic. I don't know, he thought maybe it's two lanes, so each lane is two different directions. You know, you have highways like this. He thought maybe I move to his lane. I move to the right lane, he come from the left lane. It happens. I wonder how many cars that fool saw going against him until he will realize that he's going to the opposite direction. So, the things that we mention, it's like a drop in the ocean, drop, compared to how much we still have to say. We only gave a taste from the foundation, the principle of this creation and how deep it goes. Most of the language that the Chachamim use, they was all analogies. It's very hard to understand, so they gave a lot of many examples. How a person can elevate his level of knowledge to something that will be very, very positive in his understanding who is Hashem and how Hashem looks at us. There's only one way to do it. Not through colleges, not through reading all kinds of books, not through learning politics, business, history. This is all not going to do any good for a person. Even if he killed himself all his life and becomes a very educated person, he's still the same loser from day one. He did not make one inch forward. All my life I read, Rabbi. You can read, you can learn as much as you want, it won't help you. There's only one thing that helps you. What is it? Learning Torah. Now you may say, a part of the Torah is also history, right? Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, he lost the war. Dariush Amadi, Dariavesh, he went, he fought against Babylon. He occupied Babylon with Koresh. Koresh, he was the father-in-law. Together, they occupied Babylon. The empire of Babylon fell. And now they control Babylon and Kasdim, which is Kurdistan, the Kurdish area. And then a year later, Koresh went against this Dariush Amadi and took over the south of Babylon, Kurdistan. And later, Ahasuerus took over. He made a revolution like they're trying to do in Egypt. This is history. This is all what we learn in the Torah. It's in the Gemara. It's in the Navi. Right? So what's the difference? If I learn it from the Gemara or from the prophet, or I learn it in a secular history book that has the same words, what's the difference? Isn't it Torah? Right? The answer is no. Because the very, very famous mistake that people do is thinking that Torah, it's only the subject of what you're learning. I give you an example. You can have the same book of Torah, same book. One person wrote it, and another person wrote it. If you learn in the first book, it purifies your soul much greater than the second book, even though it's word by word the same books. The fact that this holy man, in a very high level of righteousness and pure, wrote the first one, and the second person was 50-50, Sometimes he's righteous, sometimes he's wicked. He's not so holy. It's not, you know, it's not in a very high level. He wrote the same idea, same thing. But the one that you read in the first one, it's helping your soul much higher than the other one. Where in the world you have a difference between this book to that book in anything else, math. If a murderer wrote a math book and a decent person wrote a math book and it's the same numbers, does it make a difference? Here you know the same math and here you know the same math. It's not making a difference who wrote the math or the history or geometry or anything else. But in the Torah it's very interesting. It's very, very... It's critical. Why? In Shulchan Aruch, the book of law, it says that a person that is not decent, you're not allowed to learn Torah from him. If you know for sure that this person that has a very nice long beard and even knows a lot of Torah, he can tell you by heart any question you have, but he's not a decent person, he's too much playing around with the ladies, he's... kosher, not kosher, he eats. He participates in mixed parties, mixed dancing. It's my community. I have to do it, you know? He has excuses for everything. He's in politics. Every time you come to him, he wants money. You have a problem, you come to him. How much are you going to give me? Tell your father to sell his house. We're going to make you a special tikkun. Today it's very popular, all these things. Someone like this, not only you're not allowed to give him anything and to be fooled by him, you're not allowed to hear his lectures, Bichlal. If he makes a shiur, you're not allowed to go and hear Torah from him. Not only it doesn't help you, it damages you. It makes a damage to the soul. You know what's going on here? It's halacha Shulchan Aruch. Mi she'eno ra'uy, a person that is not good, is not worthy, asur lilmod mimeno Torah. Nowhere in the world you have restriction of learning anything from anyone other than Torah. Why? Torah, it's holy, it's divine. Everything else is nonsense. I know math, big deal. I don't know, big deal. I know, whatever, all the things they teach. Very nice to know, very nice. It's always better to know than not to know. It's not critical. Learning Torah is very dangerous to learn it from the wrong people. I'm not talking people who teach lies and teaching against the Torah. That's bichlal, that's mamash wicked people. We are now talking about someone who has very bad personality. Angry, taking revenge, speak lashon hara about everyone. But he has a beautiful beard. $300 hat, made in Italy. Not Bulgaria, Italy. And the frog, special custom made. And he stands in the airport and brags to someone how beautiful is his apartment after the renovation he made. You understand? I have someone in mind, so I describe the things he does. And call women at 2 o'clock at night. It's been 2 months since I heard from you. What's going on? You sure you're okay? I was worried about you. 2 o'clock at night. I'm coming to give lecture in your place. Are you going to be there? No. My husband is out of town. Okay, so we come to pay a visit. There are people like this. There are. Believe me, there are. There are. Come, let me measure your waist. I have a special kameh to write for you. But don't tell my brother that you came to me. Why? His brother knows who he is. You understand what's going on here? That's what's going on. I always tell people, if you are impressed by the way people are looking, you're going to have big surprise in the end. Because if it goes by the image of the face, well, let's all learn Torah from Bin Laden. He also knows Torah, I promise you. Bin Laden knows Torah more than all the Israeli secular Jews. For sure. Every Israeli you ask today who's Avram and Sarah, they don't know. They went to public school in Israel. All the 17, 18, 19, 20, all this generation that growing up now, they don't know one sentence from the Torah. One sentence from the Torah they don't know. Go, I'll never forget the interview one Israeli newspaper reporter interviewing Yimach Shimo Yasser Arafat. I ask him, you don't think that we have the right to live here? The Israeli ask him. So he says to him, sure. The land belongs to our parents. They were uncles. The Israeli doesn't know. So he starts to teach him about Melchizedek. The Israeli guy that wrote the article, he didn't hear the word Melchizedek in his whole life. The one despicable murderer that butchered so many kids by putting bombs in their face, teaching a Jew that grew up in Israel, who is Melchizedek Melech Shalem. He doesn't even know this moron. And then the Israeli politicians, when they go to the United Nations to argue, one verse they bring from the Quran, the argument is over. Why? The Quran says Eretz Israel belongs to the Jews. Not one of them knows, nothing. Open the Quran, see what it says. I'm God, gave the land to the Jews, finished. Belongs to them. And many other examples. When you don't know, a nation that doesn't have a history doesn't have a future. When Napoleon came to Israel 200 years ago, 250 years ago, he saw the Jews sitting in the temples and crying. He asked the general, why these people sit on the floor and crying? What happened? He told them their temple was destroyed. He said, when? Yesterday? He said, no. 1800 years ago. Napoleon, was this a joke? Now they remember to cry? No, sir. Every year they gather together and they sit on the floor and cry. He said, these people are special. If they have history, they definitely have future. You understand? If we teach our children everything besides our background, there's no future. What do you expect from them? They don't have roots. They're not connected to the land. That's why so many Israelis don't care to give the land to the murderers. Just give us a place to live. They don't care that the land is divine, is holy, and it was given to us by God. They don't care. Just give me a place to live. Take everything. Give me just two streets. Don't kill me, please. Muhammad, don't kill me. They don't care about the Torah. They just care. Give me a place and don't kill me, please. But they don't care. Kill me, don't kill me. I'll fight with you to the end until I destroy you. And there's no problem to slaughter your babies while they're sleeping, two months old, like they did on Friday. Thinking that you can make a peace with a lion and a tiger and a crocodile, it shows who you are. If somebody comes to me and says, hey, there's a very, very angry dog here, let's make peace with him. You bring him some bones. You give him some gifts. What happened as soon as the leash ripped? He ripped you apart. He cares that you gave him bones every day. Right away, he attacks you. You know, in a circus, that trainer of the lions, 15 years he trained the lions. One time he put his head, the lion chopped his head off. 15 years he's taking care of him. The nature of Ishmael, even if they want, they can't. It's in their genes. In their genes. Why? The Torah say, Hashem, the creator of the world, say, Pere Adam, a wild beast. He's a wild beast. There's nowhere in a history you can do any peace agreement with him. It's never going to end. If he cannot kill you, he doesn't have any point of life here. His life is worthless if he cannot spill your blood. That's all he thinks about. I promise you, if we move to the moon, all Jews will be sent by a spaceship to the moon to start from zero. They'll follow us to the moon to kill us over there. Why? Their life will be worthless without spilling Jewish blood. That's it. So what's the point of talking about making an arrangement, politics, let's give them half of the land? It's never going to end. You see what's going on here. It gets only worse. Why? When you show weakness, our children being slaughtered while they sleep. That's all. So you ask, so what's going to be the end? It's going to stay like this forever? Bloodshed forever? The answer, yes. Unless if the Jews will make peace with God, with Hashem. When all Jews would make peace with Hashem, there will be like a feather flying in the wind. Shh. In 1 second, you won't see one of them left. Only reason they get power, the Zohar already said, when Israel is down, Ishmael is up. When Israel is up, Ishmael is down, which means Ishmael doesn't have his own existence. His existence comes from me and you. If I do what needs to be done, he's eliminated completely. He can stand over there in Gaza and bark until tomorrow. He cannot do anything. But when I'm going and betrayed Hashem, he becomes very strong and very brave. That's what's going on. Otherwise, here, look in the history. Look in the Arab countries. There were holy rabbis, if you check, Rambam, he went to Egypt. Many of the Chachamim lived in countries of Ishmaelim that hate Jews very much. Almost all of them. Very difficult to find one of them that loves Jews. Maybe some of them don't want to mess with this. But almost all of them, waiting for the moment they can destroy the Jews. That's it. And they admit it. They're not hiding it. They admit it in your face. How is it possible in that case that so many tens of thousands of Jews were living in their country, building synagogues, building yeshivot, walking with yarmulke and tzitzit in the middle of the worst countries, the biggest enemies of Jewish history, in Syria, in Iraq, in such places, that all they want is to spill the Jewish blood, and the Jews were living there and building synagogues and yeshivot, and the rabbis walk in the street, and they have kosher butcher, everything. Why? Because when the Jews are holy, they cannot touch you. Not only they cannot touch you, when a rabbi dies and they bury him, they go to his grave to pray over there, like in Morocco. Go see in a grave zone in Morocco, how many Muslims people every day pray in Rabbi Amram ben Diwan in Morocco, there are graves. How many Muslims stand over there and pray? You know the Moroccan righteous girl, Solika? Solika, you heard that story or no? There's one Jewish girl, Solika, she buried in Morocco. Every day you have hundreds of Muslims crying in their grave for salvation. Jewish girl, not even a rabbi. Why? Well, what makes her so holy? One time the prince, the Arab Muslim Moroccan prince, saw her, that she was very beautiful, and he grabbed her and wanted her to marry him. But they have a rule. They'll never marry a Jew. He has to convert to Islam. It's not like the Jews sell God for a peanut. Right away run to marry Christine or Fatma. By them, God forbid, we'll marry a Jew? Instead of kissing the feet of the Jew, you know, that he agreed to talk to them, Bechlal. We're not going to marry the Jew. You want to marry us? We're forcing you to marry us, but after we convert you to Islam, and if not, we'll kill you. But we won't leave you a Jew as our partner, no. So guess what? As results of this, you have thousands of terrorists in Israel, Arabs that are actually Jews. Because the mother is Jewish, that they force her to convert to Islam, but the Jew can never convert. Stay a Jew no matter what. They are thinking the Arabs, in reality, they are 100% Jews. And they put bombs and kill Jews, and they're actually Jews. That's what's happening in Israel. Tens of thousands of Jewish women live in Arab villages in Israel. Tens of thousands. There's all kinds of versions. 60,000, 40,000. Everybody agrees, it's many. And each one of them has 10 kids, 13 kids, which are all Jewish. Think how many Jewish terrorists are walking around with Arab accents. Ahmed ben Sara. Mustafa ben Rachel. That's what's going on. So Solika, she doesn't want to convert to Islam. She told him no. He said, hey, I'll give you a palace. You'll be the princess of Morocco. You'll be rich. Jewelry. You walk in Fifth Avenue every day, Madison Avenue, shopping nonstop. There's no credit card yet. But don't worry. The servants will prepare for you all custom made. Why do you care? You eat whatever you want. You have servants. They take care of you. Just, it's the law. It's the law of the land. You cannot marry a Jew. You have to become Muslim. No. They give her a few days to think about it. She refused. So he said to her, by tomorrow, up to now they were nice. Now they move into the next way. What is it? If by tomorrow you don't convert to Islam, we tie you to a horse in the middle of town and the horse begin to run. Now remember, in those days, there was no floor like today. It was full of thorns, rocks, who knows what. And the horse will pull her all over. And all the Muslims will stand and cheer what they do to this Jewish girl. They tie her to the horse, and he begin to walk, and then to run, and then full speed. After a few minutes that she's bleeding all over, it's a true story that happened in Morocco. She's buried in Morocco today. She screams, stop! They were all happy. Ah, we broke her. That's it. She's going to agree now. So the prince is happy. No, maybe she's giving up. She said, I want a safety pin. Please give me a safety pin. Safety pin? What do you need it for? Just give me a safety pin. They run, they get some safety pin. What happened? She had a skirt. When the horse is pulling her with the wind, the skirt came up. She's not modest. So she took the safety pin and took the skirt to her down below her knees and stuck the needle into her flesh, into the skin, and closed it that the skirt will not fly as they carry her like this in the middle of Morocco there. And then she said to him, now you can run. And he ran until she died. That was the end of it. I'm thinking, when I think about this story, I say, wow, our sisters, our daughters, cousins, mothers, whatever, walk half naked on the street or completely naked. Nobody puts a gun to their head, nothing. Free. Freedom. Democracy. Democracy, Rabbi, Tel Aviv, New York, Paris, London. Free! Nobody puts a gun and they go like this on the street to get Hashem angry. And she, all she cared about in this moment, that people would not see her legs. You understand why she's holy and why they pray by her graves? Because even they appreciate someone like this. She did not give up. And all she cared about, her legs. Tell it to the girls that walk with all their legs open like this on the street. She doesn't even understand what does it mean, a human being, a daughter of God, representing God in the world, making scenes in public, on television, in magazines, taking pictures that all these Guidos all over the world, their saliva is dripping by looking at her. Yes, that's what happened today. Worse than animals. No respect. You know what? You don't believe me? Go to Yugoslavia. Go to Armenia. Go to every primitive village in the world, in Mexico, in Panama, in Argentina, in Yugoslavia, anywhere you want, and find one Goya in a primitive places, I'm not talking in fancy cities, that would agree to walk with bikini and take pictures in a magazine. Show me one Goya. Go to all this old fashion in Russia, in Yugoslavia, how they all have handkerchief on their face. You know, that's how it is. You, my daughter, you will be in a magazine? Before she even make a beep, they chopped her head off. You're going to walk like this naked on the street? You bring a boyfriend to my home before you marry to him? Go in. Go in. They're allowed. According to the Torah, they're allowed to go in. They go in allowed. She can bring a boyfriend and live with him without a marriage. It's not a sin for them. For them is not a sin, and most of them will not dare to do it. For us is a horrible sin, spiritual holocaust. Nobody makes a beep. The father and mother sit in this room, and right on the other side of the world, Johnny the Goy is in a room with her daughter, right here in Queens, thousands from the community. She brings him home. They go into the room, smoke drugs together, make sins and abortions, and nobody makes a beep. Donate. We have to make a new synagogue. Help us. You know, when they made Yeshiva Bet David in Monsi, it's a famous yeshiva for kids, from first grade until... They needed more than $1 million. We're talking more than 20 years ago. To build a whole nice big facility, a few acres. So they came, the one Jew offered all the money in one shot. Don't bother fundraising here. How much you need, I write. 2 million, 3 million. Just tell me. I just want you to write my name on a building. Well, that's the problem. He's married to a Goya. His wife is not Jewish. They come to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, was the Chacham that lives in Monsi. Very holy person and so straight. It's hard to believe that in our generation we have such an honest person that lived. He never said in his entire life one lie. One lie in his entire life. He never agreed to say one lie no matter what happened. If they used to give him a gift, he used to go to the silver store to appraise it, that he knows how much taxes to pay the government. They gave him a menorah gift. How much is this? $1,500. Okay, he puts it in his income tax. You understand? Even the IRS, if they knew that he didn't, they wouldn't care. It's not a part of the law. It's income. You understand? One time when he was 17, 18 in Russia, in Yeshiva, they invited him Friday night to eat in a family. They gave such a stale fish. He tasted it, he almost vomited. Then the woman came out and said, Yankale, Yankale, you're not eating? So not to embarrass the woman, what did he say? Not to embarrass her, he said, I don't like fish. He had no choice. What is he going to tell her? Your fish tastes like poison? Embarrassing her after she invited him for Friday night meal. So he told her, I don't like fish. 60 years later in Monsi, my Rav was his student. He went to him and said, Rabbi, I never saw you eating fish on Shabbat. You don't like fish? He said, I love fish the most, my favorite food. So why you never eat fish? It's not kosher, you have tell me. He said, no, chas v'shalom, it's perfect. So why you don't eat? 60 years ago, he told him the story, and I'm stuck. I'm stuck. Why? If I eat, it's going to be a lie, retroactive. And I made sure that all my life I never say one lie. So they come to him, Rabbi, he wants to give us all the money, and the yeshiva will be ready in 2 months. Should we take? And he wants to write his name on a building. He told them it's better not to make the yeshiva than write the name of such a sinner on the building. Chilul Hashem like this? Absolutely not. The next day, they come back to him and say, Rabbi, okay, he understands. He agreed not to write his name without writing his name. So he said to them, to tell you that you're not allowed to take his money, I can't, because it's not true. You're allowed to take money from sinners. It's donation. But it's much better to take the money for Jews who keep Shabbos and marry to Jews and live according to the Torah. It's much more blessing in the building. So if I would be you, I wouldn't take his money, even without writing his name on the building. You do whatever you want. And they had a meeting, and they decided to have emunah in Hashem. And they collected money from different people. It took much longer. And they built that holy yeshiva in Monsi. They have hundreds of kids. All the rabbanim came out of there. Today you have big rabbanim that grew up in that yeshiva. And they did not want to take money from him. Why? Where is the blessing of this kind of money? Many of us think that by giving donation, we justify ourselves to become righteous. It's true. Donation opens you a lot of merits. But I knew rabbis that when a person came to give money, they said, I don't want your money. So why? What's wrong? He said, if you give me money, you stay a sinner. I'd rather not take your money. So why? He said, because after you give me money, it would make you stay with this kind of lifestyle of yours for another 5 years at least. Why? It will relax your conscience for a few years now. You give so much for this building, for this yeshiva, you're sending every month. It doesn't change you. Why are you not changing? Don't talk to me. I do more mitzvot than you. What? You know that yeshiva? I send money every month. That's why he's telling Chalel Shabbat. Why? Because he says, yes, I'm not perfect, but he's also not perfect. Thanks to me, it's all this. He doesn't want to change. Sometimes to shock him, I don't want your money, my friend. Keep it for yourself. Go eat another steak, pork, or whatever you eat. Don't do us a favor. Ah, maybe you make him think. You gotta be a hero for this. It's not so simple. This is the last things of the Rambam today here. When a person sees these things, and all the things that Hashem does for him, and how important every little thing that he does, he falls in love with Hashem right away. Falling in love with Hashem, it's called being a grateful person. Not falling in love with him after what he has done for you, show that you are an ungrateful human being, which is a very serious problem. What the way to define wisdom in one word? Somebody asks you, tell me a word that is equal to wisdom. One word. Not two, not a sentence, not just one word. You have to say wisdom in another word. Which word is this? No? What do you think? The answer is busha. Shame. Shame. Every person that has shame in him, when he does something wrong, he's embarrassed, he's becoming red, he runs away. Wow, what did I do? Let me run away from here. That's a smart person. Person that doesn't know how to get embarrassed, whatever he does. You want me to get naked in front of the whole world on television? How much you give me? 10,000? She has children watching her at home. Right away, no problem. Why? Nothing here. The smarter you are, the more embarrassed you are to show your body on the street. I know righteous women, even in hidden rooms, they'll never take the cover of their head one time even. In hidden room, maybe one time the kid will walk in and see my hair. It's already an embarrassing thing. Or when the husband and wife, when the wife is not pure, she has nida, they separate the beds. Every person I know never puts the bed attached, never. Put something in between and it's always separated. There is permission to attach it. Why none of them does? Because the kid's going to start asking questions. Hey, how come 2 weeks is attached and then you're moving it? The kids start talking about it. It's premature. Kids don't think what they say. They go in the living room, Uncle Moishi, I don't know why the beds are together today. I helped my father move the bed. Why? Shame, it's wisdom. Shame is wisdom. You see in a woman, the more noisy she is, the dumber she is. The more quiet she is, smarter she is. Smart woman doesn't make a lot of noise in front of audience. Everywhere, running around, moving, this, screaming, getting up, screaming. Modesty. You're a queen. Queen doesn't jump like selling watermelons in the street. That's why you go in Israeli markets in Israel, it's all secular. Everyone scream, 2 for shekel, 5 for shekel. I never saw in history one woman who does it. It's an embarrassing thing. The Torah says a woman, she's allowed to go and collect the tzedakah on the streets. A father has to take care of his, if he has a little money, not enough for the boys and the girls, he has to feed the girls. The boys will go and collect donations. Why? Why? It's discrimination! What? Ladies first? Since when? Ladies, is not respect for them to go, hey, give me money, I'm hungry. No respect. The woman should not show herself too much. She with her husband, with her family, fine. Too much. Millions of makeup, tons of red, yellow, this, gluing nails, putting all kinds of things, pink, that. Like a clown in a circus. To attract attention. That shows there's nothing inside. No offense to anyone. If you think about it carefully, you see that's what it is. The more flashy you are, I know a woman, she has so much jewelry. Maximum, she put a tiny ring and that's it. Why? I don't want to attract too much attention. How come you have so much jewelry? My husband is crazy. He's buying me jewelry every week. I don't want to have a show off. Very solid, very simple. You know these wedding gowns? Millions. Stars all over with the light of the camera. She thinks she's in Hollywood. That's Judaism. This is the daughter of God. She's worse than these Arab terrorists who comes with this and blow themselves and kill children. How does she come? Everything covered. All covered. She comes to blow up children, to murder them, right? While she's covered from head to toe. And she comes to the shul like she goes to the beach. What happened today? I can't walk. The skirt is so tight. 2 hours to get dressed it took her until the skirt went on. Why that another 5, I don't want to say what, would look at her tonight in a wedding? A married woman, a mother to 4 or 5 kids. She's happy that 17, 18 years old kids looking at her. And she called herself religious. Rebbitzin. Some of them give lectures with a $5,000 wig. And when someone like me come and say the truth, they hate him for the rest of their life. Instead of say, you know, I'm so embarrassed. Everything you say, it's me. So I gotta start changing. There are people like this. But most people, what's their first address to throw all their dirt? The one who told them the truth. How dare you saying this? You telling me I'm not religious enough? My husband is the Rosh Yeshiva. Your husband goes to heaven and you cannot join him. Probably you make him not go there also, that he allow you to walk like this. Rabbi, we live in a very weak generation today. It's better we do this than nothing. This is the thinking of the losers. It's good I make 50 bucks a day. It's better than nothing. This guy will never be rich, obviously. Right? Baruch Hashem, I make $50, I'm very happy. I'm not saying, no, stay like this, no problem. But to say that you have a dream to be a millionaire, it's not really the truth. It's better I do a little bit, Rabbi. Birkat Amazon, short. So I went to a place, there was a Seudat Hodayah. A boy had cancer and got cured, Baruch Hashem. So his parents made a very fancy evening, not fancy, but very respectable Seudat Hodayah to Hashem. And there was one person who comes sit next to me. He holds his plate, I hold my plate. We sit on the side. And he tells me who he is. So he say, you know, don't look at me like this. I'm the rabbi, I was the rabbi here, I was the chazan in that shul. I was the rabbi here, I was the rabbi in Israel, I was the rabbi in Brooklyn. He's telling me his history now. Then in the end, he said, oh, it's late. He opens the Siddur, he says, Birkat Amazon, there's Mekutzar, half a page. No, he says, oh, I'm in a rush. Birkat Amazon, Mekutzar, where is it?
it was very nice meeting you, and he leaves. After giving me an hour speech, is this rabbi, if that's the way the rabbis look, forget about that. We went bankrupt. Two more minutes to say thank you to Hashem. I'm in a rush. In a rush to where? Where was he in a rush to? Go and check. This is what's going on. Isn't it the truth? Or I'm exaggerating? What do you think? Huh? The truth, no? Ay, 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 ay. And everyone copy from the other. Somebody called me up today. Did you hear the new trend now in Muncie? What is it? Women go to a gym. Women only. No men. There was one black Goya comes and bring Brazil music. I don't know how they call it. Zumba, Rumba, Shmumba. Something that already by the name you see it's 100% Tum'ah. Just the name, you faint. And they put music and they do aerobic. Left and right and this. So I say to him, so why are you calling me? Say, ah, you know, it doesn't bother you? This is all religious, very religious women. The wife of this rabbi, the wife of this chazan. He said, but that's not what I call you about. That's been going on for weeks already. Tomorrow they invite this Goya to one of their house. They follow a shiur Torah in their house with this Zumba Rumba. The Rebbitzin comes, she gives 1 hour Divrei Torah. They kick her out from the window. Everyone takes their clothes off and begins. Rachel Imenu, Rivka Imenu, Sara Imenu, Rumba. With Christine from Brazil. Rabbi, we want to be pretty to our husband. Who are you telling stories? Get yourself a treadmill and run 4 hours a day. You'll be pretty, don't worry. No, Rabbi, but it's fun. She's great. Emptiness always make a person look for something new. What about goyish music? 2 hours you're listening to all this filthy music and all these bad words over there. Do they make enough? Today, do you have a song that the goyim writes that it's clean from curses or from bad thoughts? One way or the other, you're either gonna see JC. Run your day right there in the morning. You want to listen to the news? Or if not JC, some kind of a love story. Two sinners sing for each other. Or rock and roll, drugs, what they call it? Something like this. Or curse words, mamash curse words. Just already put it on the radio. Sometimes they make beep, toot. In Israel, they never heard of this toot. The more curses, the happier they are. They put it on television. Now there's new things now. I don't even want to say it in front of the camera. What's the new thing? Let's shut the microphone. That's what's going on. Bezrat Hashem, time ran out. It's a wake-up call. Purim is coming. Purim is higher than Yom Kippur. That's why Yom Kippur is called Kepurim. Kippurim, Kippurim, like Purim, almost. Yom Kippur, you fast, it eliminates your material. So the soul is rising. Once the material is eliminated, the soul is growing to a higher level. That's why we feel great on Yom Kippur spiritually. But Purim, we're reaching this level with eating and drinking. That's why when the person drinks, until to a point that he sleeps already, also eliminates his body. It's two different kinds of elimination. One is through suffering, and one is through enjoying. That's why through enjoying is a higher level if you stay in control. Stay in control. That's Purim. Why they call Megillat Esther, Esther? Why not Megillat Mordechai? Why not Megillat Purim? Why not Megillat Paras? Why not? There's going to be so many names. Why Esther? Again, ladies first. אבל למה Esther? First of all, her name was Adasa. Megillat Adasa. Why Esther? Because everything in the Megillah is secret. Esther. Up to that generation, Hashem communicated with the Jews face to face. Direct magics, everyday miracles. Miracle, miracle, Bet HaMikdash, first temple, Exodus of Egypt, this man, everything. From that generation on, the curse started. Which curse? Bayom Ahu Aster Astir Panay Mehem. Up to that generation, it's, you can meet me face to face. From now on, you have to communicate with me through phone and email. And I'm going to do for you, but I'm going to hide. You will never know. It's me, not me. It will be very difficult to see my miracles. That's called Aster Astir Panay Mehem. Aster Panim. That's why we call it Megillat Esther. Because what you read, you think you understand. If you begin to learn the secrets of the Megillah, you faint. Faint. What's the poor Haman did? Haman wants to know if Hashem is with him or against him. Like Ahmadi, he also believes in God. He also believes in the same God. Manijad, which God he believes in? Muslims believe in the same God. So how is he so stupid to think that by throwing an atomic bomb on the children of God, as the Torah say, and he believes in the Torah, it's going to bring him good points in the eyes of God? How does he think that? Or the Hamas, or any one of them. How do they think? Don't they read? They say they believe in the Torah. What makes them think that by doing this, God would love them more? How can it be? Haman is Gilgul of Agag, reincarnation of Agag. Agag was the last Amaleki that stayed, survived. Shaul killed all of them, and he left Agag alive. Then came Samuel, Shmuel, and killed him. But Agag came back in reincarnation of Haman. That's what they say, Haman Agagi. Haman Agagi. Or on Samson, Shimshon, it say, Shimshon Badan. What's Badan? Badan is Nadav. Bet, Daled, Nun. Change the order of the letters. Nadav is a reincarnation of Nadav, the son of Aaron. He died because he didn't want to marry a Jewish girl. He said, none of them is in my level. What was his punishment? He got reincarnated as Shimshon and marry a Goya, Delilah, Plishtin. Measure for measure. Midah keneged Midah. Here Haman, Agag, comes back Haman. Was Haman? Haman was a barber. 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 Not Bukharian barber, don't worry. Haman was a barber. A barber, with all due respect, is not exactly a millionaire, no? Unless if he sells gold in the same place. But he's a barber. No, fine. All of a sudden, Hashem wants to take care of him, of this Amaleki. Killing a person that nobody knows who he is. He has a little barber shop somewhere. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody in the headlines. Nobody. Do you know this Mr. X, the barber? Who? Do you know the vice president, that guy? Oh, yeah, everybody knows him. In order for Hashem to do a miracle, he had no choice. He had to elevate Haman to become a billionaire richer than Ahasuerus. Only when he's the most important person in the land, every person bowed down to him. He walks, everyone is almost fainting when they see him. Now we hang him on a tree. What is it like? I saw a beautiful midrash. The animals were talking between them. The cows, the sheep, and the pigs were all together. So the sheep and the cows, they're saying to each other, they're owned by a goy. So they say, why our master give all the food to the pig? It's not fair. He's becoming fatter and fatter, and we are starving. We're skinny. Why? Because he's going to kill the pig. He wants to eat the pig. He makes sure the pig becomes bigger and bigger until he slaughters him. This is what Hashem does to the wicked people. He makes them with great neck. Greater and greater and greater. That's what we say. Mizmor shir li yom ha-shabbat. Vayatzitzu kol po'alei aven. All of them are popping. Lehisham dam ade'ad. Until the knife comes and chop their head off. First, you have to pick them up. If you want to chop their head off, you have 1,000 people. 5 of them you want to chop their head off. How do you do it? First, you bring them higher. High, 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 and then comes the knife. Shh. That's how it is, no? So for 1 second, they were above everyone. In Hashem's history, it could be 20 years. It could be 50 years. Up until you go for, I don't want to tell you where. So over here, Haman, he wants to make a pool, lottery. He takes 3 dice. You know, like they play backgammon, they have 2. Over here, he has 3. He throw the 3 on the floor, on the table, and he got 1, 3, and 3. That's what came. One of them had 1, one of them 3 and 3. Say, great. That's my lucky day. I gotta kill these Jews. God angry at them. Why? What did it come? Aleph is, 1 is Aleph. 3 it's Gimel. 3 it's Gimel. Agag, that's me. It's my lucky day. That's what came out. Agag is winning. Hashem say, yes, my friend, but you forgot one thing. Purim, the whole concept of Purim is v'nahafochu. Everything is the opposite. The goyim thought to destroy the Jews, and what happened in the end? V'nahafochu. V'ayudim shaltu v'oivehem, besoneem. That's what the Megillah say, v'nahafochu. V'nahafochu means turning around, upside down. How, what's nahafochu? Take the 1. You flip the 1. What's in the bottom of the 1? 6. What's on the bottom of the 3? 4. What's on the bottom of the 3? 4. 4, 4, and 6. 4 it's Daled. 6 is Vav. 4 it's Daled. David. Agag, when you do nahafochu, become David. Who's winning? The nation of David, my friend. These are the ones who retail him. Mordechai, Esther, this is winning. There's a lot of secrets in the thing. Listen to my Purim lecture. I was in Great Neck last night. I gave a whole hour about Purim. Very interesting. Hopefully they're posted before Purim. Thank you very much. We'll see you next Monday as usual. We are on. Thank you.